On today's show, I'll tell you three things you should never eat if you have an enlarged prostate. Plus, I'm answering your questions. Does size really matter? How will a diabetes diagnosis impact your erectile health and prostate surgeries? I'm Dr. Rachel, and this is Gimme an E, the show that helps you get hard so that you can breathe easy. Food, supplements, exercises, the latest and greatest technology. If it helps you get up, I'm going to talk about it. It's about elevating your manhood. It's about electrifying your sex life.
It's alive!
One letter, one voice, shout it out. Gimme an E! I got some great questions to go through. I even got a question from a 17-year-old that I'm going to share. And you guys also might be able to help him out a little bit with this question. Of course, it's about penis size. I mean, there's lots of things that we can worry about. And as a 16, 17-year-old, size is important and size continues to be important. So we'll talk about size. Hey, Paul, we'll talk about size and how that, can affect your life. When does it stop growing? What to expect? And can you really change the size? And I think that that's a really important question, because I remember when I was a kid, I had a nose that I didn't like. So I was always in the mirror. At night, I would tape it up. I would do certain things to it. And honestly, it changed the shape of my nose. I mean, I look back at other pictures when I was a kid and my nose was a different shape. The penile tissue is very similar. So the answer I'm going to give to his question about being 17 and wondering about the size and is it going to change? It's going to be twofold. And I thought about it and I was like, oh, I don't want to answer this question, but I got to answer the question because some other people are probably wondering the exact same thing. So thanks. Hey, Ken. Awesome. Guillermo, what's going on? You know, Ken's going to be joining me in a Zoom for the guys in our complete stiffness training. Ken is one of my coaches, and he is, I talk about him all the time. You know, he is a success story. He was able to get his erectile function back on track, struggled with it for a really long time. So such an honor. Thank you so much, Ken. The guys appreciate you. I appreciate you. Awesome. Thank you, Anthony. So I've also got some great questions. You know, I got a lot of prostate questions coming through, so I'm going to tackle some of those for you. And of course, I want to tell you the three things that if you have an enlarged prostate, you should absolutely, positively never, ever, ever eat. And in order to have that conversation, we've got to talk about why the prostate gets enlarged in the first place. And I got some other great questions too. You know, the diabetic question keeps popping up. So, I really want to reiterate that by the time we have been diagnosed with diabetes, there are a few things that you've got to think about in terms of erectile health and just overall health, because usually by the time you're diagnosed with diabetes, the issue has been going on for some years there. It just hasn't been, discovered. So we'll talk about that as well. I bought nitric oxide. When can I take the pills on the day? Now, here's the thing. We cannot buy nitric oxide. If we could buy nitric oxide, the world would be such a healthier place. But we can't buy nitric oxide. But what you can buy are things that are going to supplement your body's ability to produce nitric oxide. And my favorite versions of that are nitric oxide supplements that are designed to give you nitrates, kind of like eating a bunch of spinach or, beets, things that are really high in nitrates. So they mimic that process, but give it to you in a concentrated capsule formula and help boost the nitrates in your system to help boost your body's ability to make nitric oxide, right? So when you're taking a nitric oxide supplement, generally speaking, you want to take them in the morning. And the great thing about it, I also got a question about the nitric oxide test strips. Now, if you're ordering the supplement that I actually think is pretty fantastic through my site, then you'll notice that you're getting two test strips with it. And so what you want to really do is take the test strip, use the test strip and see where your nitric oxide levels are in the first place, right? And then you go ahead and you start taking your supplements. And then after about 7 days, check it again and see where your levels are. Usually, generally speaking, we see an increase in the color within a day or two of even starting the supplements. So that's how you know that your nitric oxide levels are potentially on the rise. That strip is measuring the nitrite content stored in your saliva. So believe it or not, our ability to make nitric oxide comes from two different pathways. And the pathway that we can actually manipulate the most is that pathway where we're using oral nitrates. And those the supplements that I actually prefer are based off of nitrates, and they're not necessarily based off of the L-arginine or L-citrulline pathway. I find that the L-arginine, L-citrulline pathway is easier to help modulate for guys under the age of 45, which makes sense because the blood vessels need to be in tip-top shape. They need to be creating what we call NOS, or nitric oxide synthase, in order to actually create nitric oxide through that pathway. So since that pathway naturally declines, what we want to do is increase nitrate intake so that we can not only improve our body's ability to do that one pathway that actually declines as we age, but also ones we can actually use it to kind of stimulate the body to make more nitric oxide using that second pathway. So with that being said, anytime you're starting on any supplement, you want to check in with your doctor just real quick. Even if you can't get them on the phone, talk to their staff and just say, "Doc, I bought this supplement. It's called X, Y, and Z. You think it's okay? Can I take it?" And let your doctor kind of work with you, because your doctor is supposed to be there for you. Doctor's supposed to help guide you through this process. You guys are co-pilots on your health. You know, he's not supposed to just dictate what you do. You guys are supposed to be working together to do that. As a matter of fact, I had a great conversation with John, who's going to be attending the intensive in December. And I was encouraging John to make sure, because he's a diabetic, but he's also lost 150 pounds. I told him to make sure that as that weight comes down and as you get healthier, your doctor should be decreasing your medication. You guys should be on a plan to say, "Okay, doc, you got me on 3 blood pressure medicine. You got me on 3 diabetic medications. My A1C is coming down. My blood pressure is coming down. I want to see these medications come down too, doc." And don't let your doctor brush you off. Say, "Doc, listen, I know you're busy, but you got me on 6 medications here. Which one do you think we can come off today? I've been following this. I've lost weight. My numbers are looking great," so on and so forth. Because listen, if you let your doctor just kind of, you know, brush you off, you'll end up on 8, 9 medications and feeling terrible. Because oftentimes, as you get healthier, your numbers are going down, your blood pressure is going down, that medication stays high, and your blood pressure is a little too low for your body. So speak with your doctor about, "Doc, what's the plan to decrease some of this medication," right? Because honestly, the goal should not be how long can we keep patients on medications. The goal honestly should be how can we help optimize health and wellness and help decrease some of these medications. So I am encouraging you to hold your doctor to the flame with this. You have options. You've got options. This is like going to a restaurant. This is like going to a store. You have options. So if your doctor isn't listening to you and doesn't seem to be engaged in helping you attack your health issues the way you want to, now it's time to start interviewing other doctors. Gone is the day that you are stuck with a doctor. They are doctors on every corner. And I encouraged John when I was speaking with him to really think about Googling holistic practitioners, holistic diabetic specialists, integrative diabetic specialists, or functional diabetic doctors in my area, even naturopathic doctors in my area. And then what you'll find is you will find some that take healthcare insurance. Not all of them are going to, because right now it's a luxury to see these types of doctors, but there are a lot of us that do take insurance. I used to take insurance I mean, to the point where it almost made me go broke. That's how much insurance I was taking. I don't take insurance anymore. I've done that, and you know, I'm in a different space in my life now. But there are still some really great doctors who take health insurance, and you want to find them. Because if your doctor's just piling on the medication every time you see them and increasing doses without figuring out what we can do to get healthier, that's not a good long-term solution for this, okay? So this is great. Oh, thank you, Mark. And Brian, does prednisone affect erections? Thank you. So prednisone, you know, as useful as prednisone can be in a short-term situation. Now, there's some doctors who will tell you that prednisone is the devil. I'm not one of those doctors. I have used prednisone successfully to get patients through hardships, and I've seen some patients be on prednisone long-term. Unfortunately, prednisone long-term can interfere with blood flow. It can interfere with endothelium, so the lining of the blood vessels, and it can throw everything off. So whenever I get a patient who's been on prednisone a really long time, my first question is, why are we on this prednisone? Who put you on it? And what is the plan to wean down off of it? What is plan B? And if we're on prednisone because of a flare or a trigger, what can we do to minimize the flares and triggers? What tests can we run to see what's triggering things, the reason we need to be on so much prednisone? So as helpful as prednisone is, you really do want to be working with a physician who is getting to the bottom of why you need the prednisone and how you can take the smallest, most effective dose of it, right? The smallest, most effective dose means the tiniest amount of it that's still going to help, but not going to cause you, you know, that's going to cause the minimal amount of issues. I think even hydrocortisone, right? Some of you are using it every day for an itchy spot on your face or a rash or something like that. Even a small dose of steroid like that can potentially long-term damage the skin. So prednisone is designed to be used in bursts, you know, like we need it. So we're going to use it and then we want to come off of it and go on to something else. It messes with your blood sugar. I mean, that we could write a whole book on all the things that prednisone long-term can do. So it particularly impacts erectile function too. This is great. Oh, that's right. Doctors are like politicians. They've forgotten they work for you, not pharma. Also, communication is the absolute best medicine a doctor can offer. You are right about that. Fantastic. Oh, can sinus medicine affect your erection? You have to take it every day. Yes. So when we think about erectile function, you have to think about it in terms of nerve pathways. So there are two different types of nerve signalings that have to be intact in order for you to get an erection and maintain an erection. And so in order to get an erection, we need to be in the parasympathetic nervous system. And then to keep an erection, then we need to flip over and be on in the sympathetic nervous system. Unfortunately, antihistamines and allergy medication can interfere with the parasympathetic nervous system and interfere with your ability to get an erection. So what you really have to start thinking about is, okay, so my doctors told me that I need to be on sinus medication every day. And when I'm not on it, I'm suffering. Are there any natural alternatives that can help me with the sinus issue? That's one thing. And then the other thing is there something around me that's triggering the sinus issue? Is there something I'm allergic to? Is it something that I'm eating? Is it something that I'm breathing? Is it the air quality in my house? Do I need to get more filtrations? Like, what is happening, the reason that I'm triggered and making and having so many sinus issues, right? So you really want to work with those. And then there are a lot of, there's some holistic remedies for sinuses. There are some homeopathic remedies for sinuses. As a matter of fact, quercetin is in the base of a lot of herbal supplements that are designed to help with sinuses. And so what I would do is just really try to go on an education binge as to what some alternatives are for managing sinus issues, and then see if you can kind of wean yourself. Maybe you're taking your sinus medication every other day. Maybe you're taking it in the evening time instead of in the morning time so that you can, you know, have erectile function throughout the day. And then after bedtime, you can go ahead and use it. So really try to get as creative as possible, but absolutely sinus medication, antihistamines, Sudafed, you know, the D with it, you know, the Claritin D, the Zyrtec D, the Walgreens D, all of that stuff. Yes, absolutely will interfere with erectile health. So I'll never forget the day after my dad passes away. I'm going through his mail and I see all of these flyers with ejaculate and, you know, just everything that you wouldn't want when you're looking for a solution for men's health. And so when I saw that, that became the moment where I decided I wanted to make sure that men had products that they could rely on, that weren't just some type of gimmick that really wasn't going to work, and that didn't have any scientific data to support it. So that's where the Dr. Rachel Institute comes from. So if you are in a space where you're looking for something to support erectile function, to support prostate function, and to just support a healthy sex life, I want you to visit the Dr. Rachel Institute. The link is below, and browse through some of the products that I've created and some that I'm sharing in this space for you. So I always like to think of you as part of my family and community. And what do? In a community, we share. So let me share what one of you wrote in about this journey. RC Life writes, "Okay, so this smoothie changed my entire relationship. My woman told me to put that down because she's wore out. Thanks, Doc." Well, we don't want anyone wore out, but I still think that this is an amazing testimonial. Baba OC writes, "Good day, Dr. Ross. For the first time in years, I got morning wood after doing the hum exercise the day before. Although I didn't get any sense, but we'll continue the exercises." Thank you for sharing. I want you to share. I want to know your journey. So reach out. The details are in the show notes. The top three things that if you have an inflamed prostate or an enlarged prostate that you should absolutely never eat: leftovers, right? So before your family shoots me, because most people don't really want to eat leftovers anyway, let me clarify. What we're doing when we're doing leftovers is we're finding these packaged containers, this plastic, and we are putting the food in there and storing it in there, and we're putting it in the refrigerator. So then you get to work the next day, or you get home and you stick it in a microwave and take it out and you eat it, okay? It's not the leftover that's causing the issue, but it's the container that we have put in the refrigerator and now we're putting it into the microwave. Listen, there is something called a phthalate, which will leak out from any plastic, even if it's BPA free, that will leak out once you microwave that plastic into your food. Now you're taking your food in and now you have disrupted your body's ability to make testosterone. Not only have you disrupted your body's ability to make testosterone, but now you're putting fake estrogens into your body, which will disrupt and cause the prostate to grow in size. So there's two things that we worry about in terms of increasing the size of the prostate. One is inflammation, and two are fake estrogens and chemical toxins that are causing this decrease in testosterone, this rise in fake estrogen, and throwing everything off. All right, so the first thing that I want you to avoid are leftovers in plastic containers that, because it's in there, we're sticking it in the microwave and then we're eating it. That is the first thing that we absolutely have to avoid, all right? Okay, so now the other thing that I want to make sure that you know, that if you have an enlarged prostate or think you have an enlarged prostate, the other thing that you should absolutely never, ever, ever eat is microwave popcorn. All right, now Microwave popcorn is the devil for a lot of different reasons, right? So not only should you consider not eating it if you have prostate inflammation, it really is just something that's kind of terrible across the board, because what they're doing is when they're putting that corn, you know, because popcorn, generally speaking, is pretty good for you, right? It's rich in fiber. It can help you with your bowels moving, you know? It is a grain, but there's technically not a whole lot wrong with popcorn. If you're cooking it in a good quality oil, you're using a little bit of sea salt, maybe a little grass-fed butter melted on top, I don't see anything wrong with that. But the problem with microwaved popping corn is the lining of the bag. Okay, so first of all, they're lining the bag with like PFOAs. Now, this is like perfluoroacetic acid. And the problem with this is that it is considered to be a carcinogen, but it's linked to cancer. It's linked to infertility issues in lab animals once it's heated up. So the interesting thing is, if it's linked to all these issues in lab animals when you heat it up, and now all we're really doing is heating it up, you can't eat microwave popcorn without heating it up. Now we've got a hot mess of a problem. Now, the other thing is, there's something in a lot of microwave popcorn, when you see on the side of the bag where it says artificial flavor or butter flavoring or butter flavored, right? They're not using real butter here. What they're actually using is something called TBHQ and diacetyl butter flavoring, right? You can barely even mention, you barely even say the words, but it usually says artificial flavoring, so on and so forth. The problem with it is that it's linked to brain inflammation. It's linked to different forms of dementia, right? So if you are eating microwave popcorn every time you got Netflix, you know, you got your bag of popcorn, it is part of your process. I want you to change your process to just putting a pot on the stove, a wok on the stove, putting the oil in there, and just popping old-fashioned popping corn. Put in the little sea salt on it, butter drizzle if you need it, but you got to avoid these things. There's problems with the packaging, and there's problems with everything that they're putting in there, right? So please avoid microwave popping corn, because remember, one of the big things that we have to worry about are chemicals that are going to disrupt the production of testosterone, chemicals that are going to be fake estrogen, but also inflammation. And eat a bag of microwave popping corn, and you'll notice the average one of them, you'll just not feel good. You know, you have this funny taste on your tongue and just, you know, feel a little out of sorts. That's inflammation picking up. And some of the worst varieties are the ones you get at the dollar store, right? I was in the dollar store the other day, which I stopped going to, by the way, for obvious reasons. And I looked at the back of the ingredients. I mean, you should see it. So one of the key takeaways too is look on the ingredient list of everything you're about to eat. And if there's more than six things in there and most of them you can't pronounce, let's leave it on the shelf and go somewhere else. Shop on the periphery of the aisles. Don't go down through those aisles where all the packaged goods are, right? The other thing, and I want to put a picture up of this one, because I feel like this type of thing is the reason why so many of us are in bad health right now. Unilever came through and convinced the world with fancy marketing schemes that fake butters were going to be healthier for us than real butter. So we got things like, I can't believe it's not butter. We got things like Country Crock. We got all of these fake butters, but what we got instead of a healthier version is we got heart disease, we got inflammation, we got diabetes. So you've got to now go back to your house and let everybody know, listen, we're throwing out the fake butters. And if we're going to use butter, we're going to use butter, or we're going to use ghee. We're not using canola oil. We're not using canola bola fake butter. You know, we're not going to believe it's just like butter, because what they're doing now is really smart. They're calling it plant-based. They've really kind of remarketed it. So that these same products that used to be, I can't believe it's not butter, they'll be like plant-based. And because they've done such a good job of making you think that plant-based is better than just good old-fashioned hunting and gathering animals and just eating them, Now you've got a situation where this type of stuff is fueling inflammation, it's fueling heart disease, it's damaging the lining of your blood vessels and endothelium and interfering with the production of testosterone and causing a rise or an increase in the fake chemical estrogens, right? So it's interfering with fertility, it's interfering with prostates, it's interfering with erectile function, it's interfering with our brain, we can't focus. So please, 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 these three things, leftovers in the plastic that you're going to microwave, nope. You got to either house it in silicone, you've got to house it in glass, or just if you don't have any of those things, throw it out, right? Ceramic even is better than that. The stainless steel you can do. Don't use aluminum because aluminum will leach out into the blood too, into the food too. And then when you go to warm it, the aluminum is still in there. The other thing is the microwave popping corn. There's so much wrong with it that you shouldn't even allow it in your house. And then the third thing are the fake butters, the plant-based butters. You know, if it's not ghee, if it's not butter, please don't think that you're doing yourself a service by eating it. It's actually making inflammation and making everything worse. All right. So this is great. Ooh, Karim Hassan says he gave his microwave away in 2007 and haven't had one since. So clearly you're not using plastic products because you don't even have a microwave. I love it. Can I be your doctor? Love it. So I can start eating meat again instead of a plant-based meat. Listen, if you don't learn anything else from me, if I don't get this out, plant-based meat is a fancy way of saying processed in a lab and formulated for some damn body, okay? Processed to the nth degree. Fake meat is fake meat. And the problem with a lot of the fake meat, now they're removing soy from it because we've caught on that soy was disrupting men's hormones and women's hormones, but particularly men. I mean, it's just too much estrogen for the body. So now they're like, these great commercials and every news story you see is about a new plant-based meat. A plant-based meat, listen, do not drink the Kool-Aid on the plant-based meat. Either eat a plant or eat a meat and eat them together, but don't think that plant-based meat is going to be healthier for you. It doesn't even really make sense if you think about it, right? So you're going to go in a lab, you're going to scrape together some proteins from a plant, and you're going to put some flavoring on it to make it taste like a steak. And then you are going to process it a little more and give it to me and expect that I'm smarter, that I'm dumb enough to think that this is going to be smarter, this is going to be better for me than just good old-fashioned meat. No, we're not going for it. But what I do want you to do is start thinking about quality meats. A plant, you know, a grass-fed organic beef, responsibly farmed fish, you know, really figuring out, because here's the thing. If the animal ate it, now you're eating it, right? So we want the animal to have not been eating a whole bunch of pesticides and herbicides and chemicals and food that was bad for them too. We want them to be fed a diet because now that when we're eating the animal, we're eating what the animal ate too. So what I want you to do is really do your own research now. So you heard it from me. Plant-based meat is not something I want any of my patients, any of my friends, or any of my family members relying on. But what I do want them to know that every now and then, having a little bit of grass-fed animal that's healthy and organic is going to be okay. Now, personally, I don't eat beef. And this was, you know, like I've just started back doing it because when I was in college, I just started to think about how bloody it was, you know, to kill off these little animals. And so, you know, I was like a little bit of a hippie. So because of that, I really, you know, kind of shied away from eating meat. But I also know that because my blood type is what it is, you know, that I feel better. And I look better when I do have some meat in my diet. So, you know, I've started sprinkling it back in, trying to find something that I can chew that doesn't feel like I'm chewing it 100 different times because the stuff's so tough. But, I mean, honestly, let's think about this logistically. Should we eat stuff that God gave us to eat? Or should we eat some stuff that some guy with some glasses and a bunch of money made in a lab? So I do another podcast where I have honest conversations about every topic in men's health. And I mean every topic. Nothing is off limits. And it's called Live Free, Go Hard. I want to share a clip from a recent episode I did with the brilliant, my friend, Dr. Beth Shirley. We're talking about all these different things that can potentially deplete nitric oxide levels and put you in a vulnerable or sick state. May not be now, but it could potentially catch up to you and start to cause issues. What popular medications that people take regularly can be associated with?
That's exactly where I was going to go.
Oh, good, good. Because, I mean, it's blood pressure medicine, it's pain medication, it's all of these things that people are, that some of the most consumed drugs in our country are wiping out nitric oxide levels. And I got to wonder, is it on purpose? Because this is the crux of being healthy. Or is it just coincidence?
I don't think there's any coincidences. So SSRIs.
For depression.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons those SSRIs are connected with sexual dysfunction.
There it is.
Is because of the nitric oxide, you know, depletion. And you need nitric oxide in order to get an erection. Us women need nitric oxide in order to even have an orgasm.
That's right, because we get erections too. Those little mini woods from the clitoris.
Yeah. Mm.
So this is making more sense. So selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, these are our fluoxetines, this is our Paxil, this is Prozac. These are the main way that depression is handled in this country, even exactly. Anxiety. You know, so we have all of these millions of people taking a drug that's wiping out their body's ability to make nitric oxide. If you want to listen to the full episode of Live Free, Go Hard and take a deep dive into your stiffness success path, you can find out more and sign up at members.drrachel.com or head over to the App Store and download the Dr. Rachel app. Okay. I had issues a week ago on getting my prostate checked. I'm new again in Georgia, and I've been given Zoloft. After 2 days, I don't want to take it. My mind is being attacked. You know, doctors, what we do is if you come in and you say, yeah, doc, I'm feeling a little down, you know, I don't know. Zoloft and all of the antidepressants is one of the things that we go straight to. But honestly, gentlemen, this is the time of seasonal affective disorder. Right? We live in different parts of the country. Some of us are getting sunshine every day. Some of us aren't getting any sunshine. And some of us get it off and on. So this is the major time where you're going to be feeling a little down. And Ken and I were talking about this yesterday, but I want to encourage you that feeling down sometimes is really a part of life. Because every day something is going to happen that takes us through the highs and the lows, and that's really normal. And unfortunately, society has made us think that you should just feel fantastic all of the time. No. Like, how can you feel fantastic when the bills are piled up to the ceiling? How can you feel fantastic when maybe somebody that you love just passed away or got sick? How can you feel fantastic when you just got a bad diagnosis from the doctor? So feeling down sometimes is really a normal part of life. And in the winter times and when the seasons are starting to change, or if you live in an environment where there's not a lot of sunshine, there's something called seasonal affective disorder. And seasonal affective disorder hits hard when sunshine isn't really readily available. So what I encourage you, if you start to feel really low this season and around this time, you want to get out in the first bit of sunshine of the day. So whether it's bright and sunny or not, get out, take a walk, be in your car. Do not wear sunglasses because you want all of the sun rays to bathe and nourish the posterior aspect of your eye. Then what you also want to consider is there's something called a balanced spectrum sunlight, right? That you can actually put in the car with you when you're on your drive to work. You can put it in the bathroom while you're getting ready. You can put it on your desk. You can put it in front of your computer. And what it actually does is kind of mimics sunlight. So it tricks your brain into thinking that you're getting really quality sun. So you can start to actually feel like maybe you're getting more sunshine than we were normally. So it is very normal to kind of go through these doldrums here. Now, antidepressants do hold a place, you know, but I honestly feel as though if you think that you need to be on antidepressants and your doctor thinks that you need to be on antidepressants, then what they also need to do is hook you up with someone who can do some cognitive behavioral therapy with you and kind of talk through some of the things that have you feeling that way instead of just focusing on the antidepressant. You know, there are food items that make us feel more depressed than not. Having a diet that's high in sugar can make you feel a little more depressed. You know, so really focusing on food items that are going to get the tryptophan up, focusing on food items that are less inflammatory, and making sure that your gut is as healthy as possible. Go back and watch the video that we did talking about the different probiotics and how different probiotic strains are useful for different purposes, right? Because when we get the bacteria right in the gut, then what we're actually doing is we're balancing the gut and we're balancing the blood-brain barrier. So we've got kind of like a barrier between the brain and the blood, which is supposed to keep harmful things out of the brain. But unfortunately, when that barrier starts to weaken, harmful products can actually get to the brain and really start to cause inflammation. They can make you start to have brain fog. They can make you not feel well. They can help cause ADHD. So really, instead of just having your doctor throw an antidepressant your way, what you really want to do is have them work with you to actually talk through some of these things, figure out where some of the imbalances are, and help you find some holistic ways to deal with depression. Because honestly, when you're on a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor or an antidepressant, not only will it kind of flatten you out from not feeling sadness, but it kind of flattens you out from not feeling anything. So I've never seen a patient fall in love on an antidepressant, right? They might start dating and be like, yeah, you know, things are fine. But it's hard to find passion and real strong feelings and enthusiasm when you're on them. So really, you know, really, really be clear with your doctor about what you want. Because I think sometimes doctors think, we think you're just coming in and you do want a prescription. You do just want to be on some pills and it's quick and it's easy. But really push a little further for a solution that actually fits your lifestyle and that you feel comfortable and confident in. The fact that you got home and decided not to take it lets me know that you weren't feeling good about his decision to give it to you anyway. So when you have that doctor right there, you have to be honest and upfront with them. You know, say, listen, doc, honestly, I'm probably not going to take that. Do you have any other suggestions as to ways that I can feel better mentally other than taking that? Like, let's do that last resort, doc. And your doctor will respect you for that and help you find an alternative way to deal with that. I'm glad you said that. Awesome. How can we shrink our prostate? So we got so many prostate questions that came through. So when we're talking about prostate enlargement is a result of inflammation. When a prostate is not swollen, is not enlarged, urine passes through normally, ejaculate passes through normally. In this situation, the prostate becomes inflamed, the flow of urine slows down, and ultimately, urine starts to back up. That's why you start to have issues like you're going to the bathroom too much at night. You know, you're dribbling. You can't push the urine out because the prostate is kind of blocking the pathway for which the urine is supposed to flow. Prostatic massage, passing vibration and sonic vibrations through, actually ends up helping make the prostate a little healthier, but also clearing up this ejaculation issue. I get questions every day about, doc, how can I improve ejaculate? How come it's slowing down? How come it's sludging? Well, the same things that are happening with urine flow are happening with ejaculation because the pathways are within the prostate. Everything that's coming through has to come through the ducts of the prostate. And as that prostate starts to get enlarged and inflamed, that's ultimately why you start to have urinary symptoms and how you actually start to have symptoms with ejaculation. Vibration and sonic vibration can kind of come through and help soothe and help the prostate detoxify so that it can actually start to shrink some. So this brings me to one of these other questions that I have that really talks about a procedure that I'm sure your urologist has talked to you about. Hello, doctor, do you have an opinion on the procedure known as prostate artery or arterial embolization, where they insert tiny beads into the arteries that supply blood to the prostate in order to block or significantly slow down the supply of blood to the prostate with the goal of shrinking the prostate? My concern about this procedure is the amount of or duration of x-rays that are used so that they can see where they're going with the arterial catheter while they perform the procedure. A typical prostate artery embolization procedure can take 30 minutes from what I understand. So this question, and there are plenty of different surgeries that different urologists will tell you, kind of free you of BPH. So there are plenty of procedures that the urologist, markets or, tells you is an amazing thing. Let's talk through this a little bit. So honestly, what I would really prefer that you do is always get at least two opinions anytime anyone is going to try to do any type of surgical procedure on you, right? Now, embolization, arterial embolization, is actually being studied now. There are different institutions are doing studies to see if this is going to be an effective way to deal with prostatic enlargement. I want to reiterate how important the prostate function is to erectile function. And I want you to know that anytime you are just going to kill off the tissue of the prostate, you run the risk of that interfering with erectile function, ejaculation, and the whole process. So you don't want to go into these types of procedures without really putting some deep thought into it. Now, here's the other part. They've been doing arterial embolization for years on a variety of different body parts. For women, it started out as being a really great treatment for fibroids. So I want to take you back to when I first heard about arterial embolization and when I first sent my first patient to get this done for her fibroids. I was told the same thing. Interventional radiologist, it's a very quick procedure. They're going to go in to the arterial system, locate the artery that's supplying the uterus, and we're going to cut off blood flow so that the fibroids shrink. And what they didn't tell me and what I didn't tell her is that it was actually going to be extremely painful, because what we're doing is we're decreasing blood flow to an area of your body. And so what happens when you decrease blood flow to your heart? What happens to your blood flow when you decrease blood flow to your brain? You have, in your brain, you have a stroke. In your heart, you have a heart attack. And it's painful, right? So when I realized that my patient sat in the hospital in pain and struggling to feel better for like 3 or 4 days, I really had to kind of dive deep into this process of arterial embolization. Now, the other part about that I don't like about prostatic arterial embolization is that the way that they're doing it is they're using beads, and they're putting beads in there to block blood flow. Well, that's an implanted foreign object into your body, so I want you to be very, really aware that that's what they're doing, and I also want you to be really aware that this is still investigational. And that 30 minutes that they say is just going to go in there and just going to take care of it really quickly isn't all that simple. So you'll find plenty of gentlemen who've had the procedure, and they'll tell you that they thought that it was really kind of nice and great, and you'll have others on the other side of it. I caution you about reading different reviews online about the procedure, because These companies have people that will actually post fake reviews. You want to actually talk to a live human. So the doctor who's telling you that you should get it, say, well, hey, doc, do you mind giving me a couple names and you know, contact information from a few of your guys who've actually had the procedure and are feeling really good about it? And if this has been the major success that they are saying that they are having with whatever procedure they're trying to get you to do, then they won't have a problem putting you in contact with some people who've had successes with it. Because you've got to realize that, you know, every Amazon review that you read is not true, just like every doctor review that you read is not true. So you've got to really do your research, because those 30 minutes that someone will take to do this procedure may end up having a bad outcome. And then who is going to help you with it then? So what you really want to do is try to get your prostate under control in as natural of a way as you possibly can first. And then if that doesn't work, then you start to look at these different procedures. Honestly, when, you know, I think they're doing some great things with lasers now. Dr. Sperling down at the Sperling Prostate Center in Florida, he's doing some great things there. And you really want to go with a doctor that you trust, that you know that what they're doing. And the problem with going through with doing these embolization procedures is that you really don't even talk to the doctor who's doing it in advance. It's a radiologist who's hired by the hospital, and that's just one of the 20 procedures, the 30 procedures that he knows how to do, as opposed to it actually being someone that you've established a relationship with, that you've figured out whether or not this person is a quack or not, and so on and so forth. So I encourage you to really do due diligence before you allow anyone to do the UroLift, the Resum, the arterial embolization, any of those things. Do your due diligence and also spend some time trying to have natural results with your prostate. Use some of the supplements that we talk about. Consider prostatic massage. Consider changing your diet. Start nibbling on pumpkin seeds. You know, all of these things. Read through some of my previous videos. All of these things certain gentlemen have had results with. Okay, so I am not a fan of this arterial embolization of the prostate. I honestly feel as though if you having prostate issues like that, I would prefer a more targeted approach to it. And I would prefer someone who practices a holistic version of urology and uses the laser technique as one of the last resorts. Like, okay, we've tried everything. Your symptoms are so terrible. Your lifestyle is suffering. Now let's consider doing some of these procedures. But, you know, you kind of want to start here and work your way all the way up to that, okay? Hi, I had hernia surgery down there. Would prostate massages irritate that area? You know, speak with your physician about that, but depending on where the hernia is located. Right? So let's see. I got another question. And this is a great question about penile growth. You know, like, are you stuck with what God gave you, or can you make some changes to it without actually getting surgery? This comes from a 17-year-old, and I honestly thought 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 times about answering this. And you're so young, you're 17, and you wrote this question, so I'm definitely taking the time to answer it as carefully as possible. Because as a 17-year-old, you have your whole life ahead of you. And being worried about your penis size right now should be one of the least of your worries, because you're already 7 inches. So you are already standing taller than most men, because the average is 6 inches. So you're way above average. So, hey, doctor, I was wondering if my penis could still grow. I just turned 17 and I have just over 7 inches erect. Congratulations. I think that's a fantastic size there. I looked up the chances and found that my penis grew rapidly between age 14 and 15, because at the time I remember it just being under 6.5 inches. So now this is something you've been investigating for a really long time, and that worries me, because it's starting to sound like you might be a little obsessed with your penis size. And being obsessed with penis size actually can get you in more trouble and help you avoid intimate situations because you're worried that you're not going to stand up to the test of time. I honestly think I start puberty at 13, but I honestly feel like I have one more stage of puberty to go through. I'm 5'10 and my weight fluctuates. I'm very fit. I work out a lot. And I've also been practicing semen retention since mid 14 or 15. Fantastic. Really nice. Sometimes I feel like I have to let go of all that built up energy sometimes. And very often I feel better and my penis look a little better, bigger afterwards. Now listen, semen retention is a skill, but I don't want you to misunderstand me. I am not saying that you should never have an explosion. That is not what we're saying here. And when you're 17 and 18, you should be exploding as often as you want to, you know, get, you know, like you can use your hand and do whatever you like to do, because this is a time for you to explore. And there is nothing wrong with that. Now, here's the thing, though. When you're focused solely on the size of your penis, you are missing all of those other fantastic things that you are actually giving to the universe and to the world, like your smile, your intellect, your personality. So stop worrying about your penis size so much and just really start living and enjoying being 17, because you only get one shot at it. By the time you're 27, everybody thinks that you should be doing adult things and there's no excuses. So slow down on that. I don't want this to become something that you are 100% obsessed with. But I also want to answer your question, because penis size is basically yes, you've been given a gift and this is the size that God has given you. By the time you're 17, let me just kind of run you through the Tanner stages here. By the time you are 17, you have gone through Tanner stage 5 of development, right? Look here. So by the time you're 13, Tanner stage 3, you have a little bit of pubic hair. By the time you're Tanner stage 5, this happens around the age of 16 and 17, sometimes even 18. This is where the pubic hair starts to really come in. And that's when the size is pretty much the size. But I also want to be very clear that you can, and people can, manipulate the size of their genitalia and the size of anything on their body, because it is made out of elastic tissue. So under no circumstances am I encouraging you to manipulate the size of your penis at this point, but I do want you to be very clear that you can change the size and the shape of your penis just based off of tugging and pulling and something called traction. All right. So it's tough because you're 17 and I want you to focus not on your penis and erection size, but on other things like school and having fun and dating and figuring out what you want to do with your life, and to move away from this topic of size. But the short version of the answer is yes, when it comes to size, you can manipulate size with something called traction. All right, well, that was a tough way to answer that one. And then I've got other prostate questions here. Someone asked, and I've been getting this question a lot, so I'm going to go ahead and answer it. How many times per week and what duration for internal prostate massage? Now, the cool thing is if you got one of the internal massagers or the external massagers, I've created this really great guide to prostate massage. And I will be emailing you a link so that you can download it. Everybody's a little different with prostate massage. And if you're doing internal massage and you've never done one before, first, you have to get used to it. So in order to really kind of get adjusted to the concept of actually having a prostate massager inside and resting there, is the first time you want to do it, you just really want to put your lube on, kind of get it inserted. And, you know, I talk you through the process of how to breathe and how to count and how to really do it without, you know, just ramming anything in or hurting yourself. And then once your prostate massager is in, really the first day, you are actually just going to sit with it in there, because you can actually, by doing your dick ups or your PC, you know, some people call them PC lunges or Kegel exercises, actually, as you do that, you are actually clamping down on the prostate massager and moving it. So it's kind of doing its own internal version of a massage. Once you've actually adjusted to that process, then you can start with the vibration part of all of this. The vibration part takes sonic waves or sonic vibrations, which are basically like sound waves, sound vibrations, and it actually is going to, let me show you kind of a diagram of that version. I don't think I have it on here. It's actually going to help with the waves hitting not just the bulb of the penis, but the nerves that are coursing laterally or through the around the sides of the prostate down to innervate or go to the erectile tissue. And the whole concept behind prostatic massage is that it helps soothe the inflammation that's there that's leading and causing prostate enlargement. So when it comes to the amount of times to do the prostatic massage, for a gentleman who tolerates the massage really well and doesn't have any issues with it and it doesn't leave him irritated the first time out the gate, then I tell him 2 to 3 times a week. But for a gentleman who does the prostatic massage and afterwards feels a little irritated, you know, maybe feels like he's going to the bathroom a little more than normal, then I would say that's more of a once a week situation. And then once you get your prostate to the point where you feel like it's under control, and then you're kind of doing it more of a maintenance thing as once or twice a month. Now, there is a difference between a prostatic massage and prostatic milking. Prostatic milking is typically where you're combining the massage with a masturbation type of process so that when you are stimulating your prostate and getting to the point where you are ejaculating, then you're using the prostatic massage to actually try to propel more of the fluid out and trying to clean the ducts. So there's two different versions of it. And when you say the word prostate massage, I think a lot of times people think you're talking about using it for pleasure or that you're talking about prostatic milking, but there are different versions of it. There is prostatic massage for pleasure. There's prostatic milking, milking of the prostate gland. And then there's just a basic prostate massage. So there are different versions of it, and all of them are something that you can do with a prostate massager. And if you're interested in starting this process of prostatic massage, I have links below for an internal massager, for an external massager. I send out with my bundle, I send out a prostate probe, which is really helpful for you locating your prostate and figuring out how to massage it, without necessarily using any vibration. Also, you know, we talked about the external massage, you know, even getting like a racquetball and just rubbing your perineum on it, trying to get to the prostate that way. I think that when we're thinking about prostate massage, I want you to think about it in terms of, you know, just a hands-on process to help soothe the prostate. And then I also want you to think and talk to your doctor about, do they advocate for any herbal supplements? Now, another question I got is, which saw palmetto, which herbal supplement do I recommend? And so this question comes through, and so I want to kind of give you guys a little guidance on that. This is a really great question.
Hey, doctor, just want to say happy Thanksgiving. Just wanted to ask you, 45-year-old male, been following your channel, been watching a couple of YouTube videos, and you talk about getting saw palmetto and which kind, and don't buy anything from Amazon.
Okay, now I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying don't just buy anything from Amazon, because Amazon does have some really great products. As a matter of fact, the one that I'm going to tell you about, actually, you can get on Amazon. I just think that you have to be very mindful about what type of regulations, what type of lab they're in, and so on and so forth. So I think a really great, great place to start in terms of a prostate support is a brand called Life Extension. You'll know them because they've got a little blue bottle. And they've got a pretty decent prostate formula. What I like about it is it's not overpriced, it's not super expensive, and it has a tendency to work if this type of supplement is going to work for somebody. And they have something called the Ultra Prostate Formula. And it has saw palmetto in it, it has pumpkin seed oil in it. It's got products that are anti-inflammatory in it. And honestly, for a lot of gentlemen, it works really well. And I know for a fact that they sell it on Amazon. It's called Ultra Prostate Formula by Life Extension. I wish I had a picture of it, but you'll know it because it's in this beautiful little blue bottle and a blue label. So you can always start there. That's one of my basic recommendations. Now, there are some higher level prostate formulations, and there are some people who really like to just take the saw palmetto and just take the rye and just take, you know, so instead of using a combination, you're actually doing them individually. So in the bundle, I actually have a whole sheet that outlines the different products that I like to use for gentlemen who have enlarged prostate. But at the crux of that, if he can stand it, is a prostatic massage. But I want you to want to be clear that some guys start with prostate massage and it's a little irritating to them. So one thing I like about the Ultra Prostate Formula is that it actually has something called Boswellia in it. And Boswellia is a natural anti-inflammatory, natural pain relieving agent, so that it actually kind of helps minimize any symptoms of like pain or discomfort that you might have with the prostate enlargement or with any part of the process. So I hope that helps. Now, then I have another question from this young gentleman here. I thought was pretty cool that you guys are actually giving me video questions. Thank you very much. Here we go.
Hello there, Dr. Rachel Ross. My name is Brandon Gibson. How are you doing today?
Nice to meet you.
I saw that video that you were doing on the E-function smoothie for erectile dysfunction. And my question is, when I purchased your book, it says take this E-function smoothie. I thought the recipe came with it, so I looked it up. But the book was mainly about prostate function and how to get it better and back to normal, getting your prostate at a smaller size and getting healthier so you can function and have a normal, better life. And I'm still trying to work on that, and that's my main goal. I'm having a lot of struggles dealing with that, but you did provide a lot of helpful information on that, so I'm definitely going to take that into account and plan on implementing all those ideas and pieces of information that's been helpful for me, add a lot of value for me. But back to the E-function smoothie, I wanted to know, I know it helps with the nitric oxide production, and it helps get blood flow down there. But what about the prostate? Does that get blood flow to the prostate? Does it make it shrink to normal size? Does it get rid of the inflammation? Does it do all the same things that it would for your erectile dysfunction? I don't have it, but because of my age, I'm 32.
But, awesome. Well, you know what? I think that's a great question, and I'm so glad that you asked it. So here's the thought process behind the smoothies. And this is why you notice that so many guys are really having great results with it. So back in the early 2000s, they came up with something called ORAC values, right? And what ORAC values stand for, it's a quick and dirty way to say the antioxidant value of a product, right? So this was, you know, back before I think processed food just took over and killed all of this. But ever since this time, ORAC values have kind of fallen out of favor. But what I love about ORAC values is they give me and other practitioners an opportunity to understand what food has the highest amount of antioxidants in it that we can actually get. So like when you pick up your E-function smoothie recipes and like you look down here at the bottom, you'll see ORAC units, right? And so what this is a nutritionist that I worked with actually calculated the ORAC units in each of these smoothies. So what they do to actually figure out ORAC units and ORAC values is it's the oxygen radical absorption capacity. And it's basically a lab test. And what they're doing is they're trying to figure out the total antioxidant capacity of a food. So what they do is they take a sample of the food into a test tube, and then they put some molecules in that test tube that generate free radicals. Free radicals are damaging things that we want to fight and combat at all levels, right? So they put it in there, and all of that stuff is it, and then they put cells in there that are, you know, vulnerable to being oxidized and damaged. And after a little while, what they would do is they would measure how well that sample of that food item actually protected those cells and those molecules from the free radicals. So the less damage that those molecules actually had, the healthier they were when they looked at them, then the higher their ORAC value would be, right? So when I was putting together and formulating the smoothie recipes, they are based off of how high can the antioxidant levels be in these smoothie recipes? How high can we boost the nitrate content in these smoothie recipes so that we can get blood flow going? The antioxidants help protect cell damage and help repair things. And then on top of that is how much of this has been scientifically proven as a food item to help repair cells, repair blood flow, and actually prostates. So if you'll notice, a number of the recipes, particularly like the ginger vitality smoothie, this is actually one of the diabetic friendly recipes. This one actually has pumpkin seeds in it. Now, honestly, some gentlemen do really well just integrating sprouted organic pumpkin seeds with sea salt into their diet. Back in the day, I would say, you know what? Just start eating some pumpkin seeds and let's see how you feel after that. Come back 4 weeks later, 6 weeks later, doc, I don't know if it's the pumpkin seeds or what, but some of my symptoms have gone away. So I tell you this to reemphasize that food, honestly, is the original medicine. And so we're taking a bunch of food items that have high ORAC values, high ability to protect from oxidative damage. We're taking food products that are higher in nitrate count, so they're going to help boost nitric oxide production. And the best part about those recipes is that women need to do that and men need to do it. We all need higher antioxidant capacity within our daily lives. We all need to boost blood flow by improving nitric oxide content. And we all need to try to get as much of that into our system as possible on a daily basis. And so that's the dumbed down version of why the smoothie recipes have been such a success and such a hit. And why when you go through the comments, you'll see guys just saying, oh, my gosh, I started taking this one. And, you know, some of them will tell you the same day they had major differences. Because here's the thing. So many of us are maybe on the carnivore diet. Maybe you're on the keto diet. Maybe you're on the vegan diet. So what we're trying to do is help get you a little bit more balance, get a boost of antioxidants in there, get a boost of nitrates into the system to boost nitric oxide production, cut down on inflammation. And that's why they've been so kind of successful. So I love that you're asking these questions. I love that at the age of 31, you've committed yourself to really eradicating these issues and getting out in front of the problem before the problem gets really, really severe. Thank you for listening to Give Me an E. Please subscribe so that you can get new episodes as soon as they're released. And take a moment to leave a 5-star review. Also, make sure that you subscribe to my email list so that you can get men's health-related topics delivered discreetly to your email, get discounts from the Dr. Rachel Institute, win prizes, and so much more. The details are in the show notes below. And if you want more from me, check me out on social media and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Until next week, live free and go hard.